What's going on, people? Welcome back to PJ's Son podcast. Your old buddy Dom with you. Last episode was the reunion episode. I was telling you guys about that, and I know at the end of it, when I was talking about legacy military reunions, one of the names I had said was Doc Ben Liotta. excuse me. You will notice tonight, your boy has finally figured out how to use Bluetooth, which is, you know, my kids can figure it out in 5 minutes, but I cannot. So I finally figured out how I can get my brothers and my people and other cool interviews just to come through my phone into my board. I upload it like the rest of the podcast. So you will notice that Doc is not live with me tonight. He is in Texas right now. But either way, I got him on the phone. This is going to be killer. We're going to talk about some cool stuff. So, Doc Ben Liotta, what's up, brother? Welcome to the show.
What's going on, brother? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think I'll probably just refer to you as Doc. It just seems natural to me. So if you're cool with that, we're going to roll with Doc.
Yeah, that's good with me. Doc is definitely one of my identities.
I know. How many years were you? Ladies and gentlemen, as I told you on the last one, Doc is, he's no longer active, a Navy corpsman. How many years were you a corpsman, Doc?
4 years active duty. Okay. 20 years, depending who you ask.
I heard that. Why don't you explain to people what a Navy corpsman is, what your mission as a Navy corpsman is, who you roll with, what you guys do. Can you give us a little bit of that, please?
Absolutely. So Navy corpsmen, the Marines do not have their own medical program. Part of that is actually because the Marines are trained a little too hardcore on how to obey orders. So ever since the birth of the Marine Corps, Marine Corps medical comes from the Navy.
Right, as we are a department of the Navy, yeah.
Right, as you guys love to say, men's department.
Yeah.
But corpsmen, we serve a lot of different roles, but specifically the role he's speaking of is to be the frontline medical in an infantry battalion. And we're trained in like advanced first aid, like trauma first aid, and we're put in there and kind of taught to do the exact same thing the Marines do. The only difference is when bullets are running down range, usually we're taking care of the wounded, whereas you guys are fighting.
All right, now
it's about the only difference between us.
Yeah, if you'd like, I'll give you my explanation of what a Navy corpsman is.
Yeah,
folks, if you don't know, there were Doc. Was there one or more Navy corpsmen on Iwo Jima for the flag raising? I think there was one.
On the actual flag raising, there was one.
Okay. So a Navy corpsman, they have to prove themselves as much as us grunts. Our corpsman goes everywhere we go. He might not have... Do corpsmen carry rifles now?
Right after me. They do now.
Okay.
They carry like smaller collapsible.
Right. As well they should.
Last time I checked.
Right. So in my and Doc's day... our corpsman had a pistol, but that wasn't his job.
It's a 9mm.
Yeah. That wasn't his job necessarily at that time to be clearing rooms. Now don't get it twisted. Cause like I just told you, corpsmen come with us everywhere we go. When we're in the field, they're in the field. When we go up the hill, they go up the hill. When we go into houses, they know where to be. But, for Marines, there's no difference. I mean, maybe a uniform different, but as far as your corpsman goes, he's the guy that's going to patch you up and going to save your life. And I know that any Marine, any infantryman, whatever branch knows exactly where I'm coming from with this, but your corpsman's he is so important and crucial and you got to have him around. So Doc, you and I didn't work together necessarily. I know a lot about you from our mutual brothers, and I just appreciate you guys so much. And I won't go into it. Didn't go into it, but I know how bad of a motherfucker you are, man. And I just want to tell you, I really appreciate that.
Thank you, brother. It was the greatest honor of my life was being a corpsman for you guys.
Was it?
No question.
That's
absolutely
awesome.
No question.
So
I consider you my Marines.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know? Where did all this come from, bro? And, when did you know? I got my story about when I knew I was going to be a Marine. Where did all this come from? When did it start for you?
Legitimately started for me with 9/11. I lived in New York, and I was in college. I was in my first semester of community college at that time. And, you know, everything happened. And that's what really piqued my interest in joining. And it's funny, I went to the Marines and the recruiter was a jerk.
Yeah, dude.
And I think partly because they had so many people coming in. So they were just weeding them out by being jerks. So I was just like, screw this guy.
Right.
And it's funny, I didn't go to the Navy. It was the last one I went to. I think it's my father always told me I should join the Navy. So, you know, we try and do the opposite.
Sure.
But I went to the Army and it was just like, no. I went to the Air Force and was legitimately thinking about it until the guy was his stories seemed so boring.
Right.
And I wanted to serve, but I also wanted to see the world, you know, wanted to have a good time.
Sure.
And it's funny. My dad came down there with me to give me a ride, but like, I wouldn't let him come into the recruiter's office. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to do this on my own. And I come outside to find him and he's gone and he comes out of the Navy recruiter's office. My dad's name is Vinny. And the recruiter's name was Vinny. And he was like, you got to listen to this guy. He's like, his name is Vinny.
He's got to be smart.
You know? So we go in and, you know, I sit the guy down. I'm like, listen, I've taken the pre-ASVAB. I have a pretty good understanding of what you guys can offer. And I was just like, what was your life like in the Navy?
Right.
And man, he got me hook, line, and sinker. He was like, you like partying? I'm like, yeah. Like, you like women? I'm like, yeah. He take me over to a map, and he's like, I've partied here. He was pointing at different parts all over the world. I was like, all right, you have my attention.
Yeah. Do you see how that could work for any, like, 18 to 25-year-old
kid, right,
though? You know what I'm saying?
Right. And then I was going to be a torpedoesman on submarines. That was my initial job that I was going to do.
Really?
Because, A, you know, you get the mechanical knowledge that you can take with you outside. But
yeah,
he was telling me that the submarines hit the most ports. Like, yeah, you're underwater for a long period of time, but the flip side to that is you hit the most ports out of any other ship in the Navy.
But baby, when we're topside,
so he was like,
we
if you really
side.
Want to see the world, right? And he's like, if you really want to see the world, he's like, go submarines. And of course, he was a torpedoesman, so he sold it well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm like partially color deficient.
Okay,
it's like two colors that I don't really see.
Okay,
and when I was going to MEPS, for some reason, I destroyed the color test. And like to the point, and they didn't tell me how bad it was, but they were basically, it was like I was colorblind. I don't know who screwed it up. I screwed it up or they screwed up the documentation of it.
Huh.
But they came back to me being like, you can't be on submarines. Like everything's color coordinated. No way you can be on a submarine.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to pick a different job.
You can't really press the red button when you're supposed to hit the green button when
right.
it comes to fucking torpedoes, you know. We said, don't fire.
Right. So they have me going through a book at MEPS of jobs. I was this close to like not signing up. I felt like I was getting pushed into it.
Right.
And I came across Corpse Man. That's what it read like to me.
Yeah, right, right.
And for those listening, it's because Corpsman is spelled Corpsman. It's Corpsman.
Like the Marine Corps.
Right. So I'm like, yeah, Corpsman. I'm like, what's that? I'm looking, you know, you can be like a medical on a hospital or a ship. It's like, be a medic with the Marines, frontline con. It's like, okay, this is it. And I go to the guy, I was like, this is the one. I'm like, Corpsman.
Oh, no.
He looked at me and he was like, Corpsman.
First mistake.
And I'm like, yeah, that one. Let's do it.
Wow.
Yes, I kind of accidentally became a corpsman. And then when I got to boot camp, the guy was looking through my paperwork and he was like, are you colorblind? And I was like, no, like maybe a little color deficient. And he was like, this says you're colorblind. And he was like, do you want to redo the test? And I was like, sure, let's redo the test. So I redo it. And he's like, yeah, you are only a little color deficient. He's like, do you want your original rating back? He's like, you actually can be on submarines if you want. And I was just like, no, I think this is a better fit for me. And that's how I became a corpsman.
Isn't that strange? We all, everybody, right? Everybody you know, everybody I know, they went into one door and the guy was at lunch, or he was, right. or he was a dick, or whatever the thing right. was, and they ended up like, for me, I broke my foot at the end of boot camp. I don't know if I told you that, but I was helping another dude up the hill, so they let me graduate, which. After graduation, I had a couple weeks at home, and then I came back and had to heal up and get, what's it called, like when the Navy signed you. I had to get signed off, released, right. and that's when I met all of our guys up at SOI. So it was like, okay. had I not had that weird step that broke my second and third metatarsal on my right foot, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
A different group of guys.
You know what I'm saying? Everything would have been so different. And it's just, it's fucking crazy how it works out like that, you know?
It really is.
Hey, can I ask you, you are the first person that I have ever known who was actually in New York City on 9/11/2001. I know it's been a long time ago, but like, how far were you away? I mean, it's incredible.
So I wasn't actually in New York City. I was in Long Island.
Okay.
Which is about I'm not sure the mileage, but it's about a 30-minute drive.
Bro, but.
I could see the smoke, though.
Right.
From where I was.
Wow.
But, no, that was a wild day, man.
Dude.
I was actually in class. I got an early morning class at like 8 a.m. And I remember when we got out of class. I'm talking to somebody as I'm walking, and like it was one of those surreal moments where your periphery, like your brain picks up on what's going on in your periphery, and like chaos was going on, like people running around, some people were crying.
Yeah.
And I stopped somebody, and this is at like 9:15. This is like right before the towers fell.
Yeah.
5 minutes before the towers fell. So this has been going on for a bit.
Sure.
And we were just in class unaware. No one made an announcement or anything like that. And some cell phones went off. I remember the teacher got pissed. It was like, turn off your phones. But I stopped somebody that was running by, and I was like, what's going on? And he was like, we're under attack. They hit the World Trade Center. They hit the Pentagon. And like, I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Right. What kind of movie we is went this? Over,
right. And we went over to someone else. We're like, yo, what the fuck's going on? And they repeated it, basically. They were just like, yo, we're under attack. Like, they hijack planes. They're crashing them into buildings. They hit the World Trade Center. And like, they're set up TVs by the student union. So I walked over to the student union to the TVs, and like 5 minutes later, the towers fall.
Wow.
And I was just like, yo, we got to get out of here. So we go home, you know, trying to call my pops who worked in the city.
Did he really?
Yeah, he does. He worked for IBEW, the electrical union.
Okay.
He was nowhere near it, but traffic and all the cell phones went down because all of our cell phones went through the World Trade Center first.
Is that right?
Disseminated to lower towers. Yeah. So when the towers went down, we lost cell service.
Great.
So that added to a bit of the panic, especially because cell phones were a little new at this point. We were still on flip phones.
For sure. I remember. I didn't even have one.
Right. Neither did I. But, you know, some people did, like my dad did for work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Yeah, I just remember it was definitely mayhem.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah, dude, I was 6 days from leaving for boot camp. I left my original.
Oh, wow. So you had already joined.
I joined like at the end of my junior year of high school.
Okay. And, you knew you were going. I got you.
Yeah, I had an original leave date of September 17, 2001. I wasn't one of those dudes saw it and went and signed up like yourself. That was just the way that it was played out. And so I'm at home. Sleeping off a going away party hangover, and my mom worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Well, they sent all government buildings home, even here in the Midwest, because who knows where the next attack on government facilities is going to be, da-da-da. So she came in just freaking, you know. She was like, Dom, you need to get up. And I was like, what? Why? She's like, and she turned on my TV in my room, and I'm like.
She's like, you're going to war.
I'm like, what the fuck is that? She's like, we're under attack. I'm like, oh my God, you know? So like much like yourself, I knew a couple dudes, buddies, older brothers. They were AAV guys, you know, tankers and even some grunts and shit. They're like, dude, we went to fucking Hawaii and then went to fucking Australia and the Philippines. We're just partying. So I was kind of just at that time banking on 4 years of, you know, some dope training and some cool fucking travel and some good stories and all that shit. Well, it didn't go down like that. Wow, man.
Did you get, did your heart sink to your stomach or did you get a little excited?
It was a lot of both. At first, it was definite fear.
Yeah, I respect that.
Definite fear at first. I was like, what the fuck, man? I'm a child. Matter of fact, Ryan McCauley just sent me a photo. We went to Tucson when we just got to 2-1. I don't even think we were supposed to leave. I don't think we were supposed to be going. We definitely didn't get no chits to go up to fucking Arizona, but we took off to Arizona. He just sent me a photo, dude, and we're like babies, you know?
Yeah.
And so on top of that, there's fucking Echo. Hey, man. My Doberman's, he's always interrupts if you've heard any of them, but so definitely first fear. And then it was that thing where there is no backing out for me. Like that's not an option. So let's hope for the best type shit. But yeah, I mean, I was fucking scared.
Well, you wouldn't have joined the Marines if you weren't looking for a little bit of a fight.
That, and I mean, I went in, I was the dude that looked at the poster of the guy in the cami paint with the rope around him for some reason. And I was like, I want to be that dude. I scored a 32 on my ASVAB. You had to get a 31 to be fucking infantry Marines. Like, it is the lowest score, I think, in the United States military. And I beat it by.
Well, no, actually, Army is 28.
All right. Well, fuck him. No, it doesn't, but I'll take it. But he was like, when they graded or whatever, like, well, good thing you're wanting to go infantry. I'm like, why is that? He's like, you barely fucking passed this thing. This is like 10th grade reading level. I'm like, hey, man, I didn't tell him that, but I was hungover when I went in that one too. So, it did. It changed everything. And I've told the story, like, on Sundays, senior drill instructor would give the rest of the drill instructors a couple hours. I don't, whatever they were doing. Nobody ever explained it to us, but so every Sunday we'd just be polishing boots, whatever we were doing. And he would have the Sunday paper back when people read fucking newspapers. And it was, you know, it was every week was a new, like an update on what was going on and who it was and what the president and this, and that, you know what I mean? So he was like, you fucking infantry boys, I'm telling you, you better get fucking ready and you better take this shit seriously. And so, I mean, yeah, it did, it changed everything, but, it wasn't until I got up to 2-1 Echo that. And, you know, you start working with the guys, you know, the deal when you integrate, especially for me, all these dudes were in boot camp together. I wasn't, I was different. So I had to prove myself to these guys that I didn't know, which luckily I'm a runner and I can work hard. I got a 32 on my ASVAB, but I can work like a motherfucker. So, having to integrate with all these new guys and, you know, become that team and that family and all that stuff is like, then the confidence started to come with like what was about to happen, because I'm like, we're really good, you know, as fire teams and squads and platoons and shit. So it started to get a little more confident, and then you're a fucking Marine. So you always just feel like you're 10 foot tall, even when you're 155 pounds, you know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, man, it freaked me the fuck out too at first, bro.
And I know what you mean when we technically, we volunteered for OIF2. I was at the hospital. I was not really ever with 2-1 officially. I was an augmentee.
Okay.
But so I was working labor and delivery.
Really?
For like 9 months. So it's funny. It's actually really funny. So when I joined, it was actually August of 2002.
Okay.
That's when I actually went to boot camp.
All right.
The official invasion of Afghanistan happened while we were in.
Okay.
And they brought in the TV and showed it. And they were like, who are corpsmen? We raised our hands. And like, you're all going to be in war in like the next year. And it was just like, okay. And then when I get to field med school, which is the training to be with you guys. So I went through regular, what we call hospital corpsman school in Chicago.
Okay.
And that's normally 14 weeks, but we were there waiting to class up. We were there a total of 6 months between the training and the waiting, because they were getting a lot of corpsmen ready.
Yeah, right.
And then we went to, it's called Field Medical Service School. FMSS. It's normally a 7 week program, 5 days a week, normal hours.
Yeah.
And they were rushing us through a 5 week program, 6 days a week, like 12 to 14 hour days. They're like, you're going to war in 5 weeks. We're putting you on the front lines. So like, that's the first time in my life I took anything remotely serious.
Right.
And you're right. That's kind of when you learn what you're made of up a little bit.
Sure.
And you're getting to know all these guys and you're learning all this shit. And then fourth weekend, Bush flew to the Reagan and declared the world, mission accomplished. So they literally were like, we don't know what to do with you now.
You're ready, so they but sent you got me to nowhere Balboa to go. Hospital.
Right. So they sent me to Balboa Hospital and they sent me to labor and delivery. And I was like, not me. Dude, I was 19. I looked like I was 12.
Yeah, dude.
Or I was 20. No, I was 19. Yeah. And I looked like I was 12, man. Rosy cheeks. No, you're going to labor and delivery. And I'm like, ah. I spent 8 months. Doctor would deliver the kid and hand it to me. First 2 hours of life was my job.
Wow.
Shots, vaccinations, like vital signs, all of it.
That's a trip.
It really was. And then looking back on it, that really prepared me for war.
Fuck yeah.
You know, you get used to the blood and guts.
Sure.
And to be honest, a lot of the job is called an IUFD. It's an intrauterine fetal demise, like a stillborn.
Oh, boy.
So you get that about, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a month. Ugh. We're having like 300 deliveries a month. You know,
wow.
Not all months are like that. But that's
I got
like
you. Peak.
And that was my first day. First day on the job, they had one. And they were like, oh, this is great training. Yeah, great training. It's like part of the process is maybe put a trigger warning out. It's a little morbid. Part of the process is you got to like cut a piece of the baby's thigh off, a piece of the inner cheek off, and use for chromosome tests to see why the baby died.
Wow.
You know, and you got to like swab its nostrils. You have to collect, like, you have to measure it.
Oh, my
God. Then you
gosh.
Have to take pictures of it. And then you have to dress it up in clothes. And bring it to the family in a crib so they can mourn. And then you bring it out and then you bring it down to the morgue.
Oh my.
I actually had no problem handling almost all of that until I brought the baby into the family's room and they're all crying. I was like, I wasn't built for this.
Bro, fuck no.
You know, and then so I get through that, bring the baby out. And then I end up having like, there is no guys at the morgue. It's someone who works at lab meets you down at the morgue to unlock the morgue for you. So I call the guy. He's like, yeah, I'll meet you down there. I go down there. No one's down there. I wait like 10 minutes just with this dead baby. And then I go back up. Like, you know, it's like an elevator ride, like six stories or something like that. And I go back. This happens twice. And then when I come back, they're like, we need your crib. Because like it was like a full moon. And that's actually no joke. When there's a full moon, you have a lot of pregnancies.
Really?
Just the way the moon, affects bodies of water. Let me think about a big pregnant belly full of water.
Okay.
A full moon will have a lot of women go into pregnancy at the same time. It's kind of wild. But so we have this full moon. It's packed. So they take the crib from me. So now I'm pissed. So I walk to lab. And it's a guy who's like, I don't know, 2-3 ranks higher than me. And it's like an HM2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got pissed and I was just like, hey man, like what the hell? You're supposed to meet me down there twice now. And what do you call it? He's like, I'm so sorry. I'll meet you down there. You know, and I was just like, nah, come back with me. We'll go together.
Hey, let's
you know,
walk together.
He, like, dropped, right. He's like, he dropped rank and he was like, I get it. I'll meet you down there. He's like, all right. So I go, now I have to carry the kid in my arms because there's no more cribs to push him around in.
Right.
So I'm carrying this baby in my arms. I take it downstairs. Finally, the guy's there. I put the kid in a room full of dead people. And then, you know, I go back up and just the elevator ride back up, man, the biggest freaking lump in my throat. And all that kept going through my head was like, I was supposed to be in war. I would rather be in war right now.
Absolutely. But, you know,
like no one prepared me for this shit.
That thing you said about when they say this is great training, at the time, yeah. You're like, what the fuck? Whatever, dude. This is fucking weird. Right. You people are weirdo. That kind of shit usually ends up being really good training, unfortunately.
It really was. No, it's true. And what's kind of cool is the nurses, they had a hard time, obviously, most of them are mothers. They had a hard time doing the procedure
Oh my
on the
God.
baby.
Yeah.
So the deal we made was I'll do the procedures as long as they take the kid into the parents' room. Like, I did not want to deal
Okay.
with the grieving family.
All
Like, I
right.
was not equipped for a bunch of people crying around me.
I'm with you.
I
I'm
know that
with you.
sounds like Neanderthal, but
Yeah. A thing that
yeah,
always
so I
happened.
dealt with it a lot.
Yeah, that's rough. A thing that
Yeah.
always got me, like right away in boot camp, they start with the kill. At
Right.
ready, and then they give you a command and you scream kill. And then when you climb the rope, you get to the top and kill, kill, kill. And at first, I'm
Yeah.
like, I'm not brainwashed. I'm not fucking stupid. You guys are trying to make me be like all like
Conditioned.
vicious and a killer and some shit. Like it's not gonna work on me. And
Yeah.
then
It did, though.
a couple months later, if you
Like, all
fucking
right, kill babies.
Yeah, dude. If you really want to get charged up, everybody starts screaming kill, you're gonna get some mean motherfuckers coming at you. And so it's
Yeah.
like it's designed purposely and it works, And but wow, that is rough, man. But I
I
guess
mean, it didn't. It the first day felt rough, and then like anything, you get used to it.
yeah.
It is what it is. This is what you got to do. And you kind of just numb yourself to whatever you got to numb yourself to.
Yeah. So,
And no, go ahead.
well, all in all, that actually really prepared you for some things that you were going to be doing.
It definitely did. I did
Wow.
not appreciate it until afterwards, but it definitely got me prepared for death. It got me prepared for guts.
Yeah.
And honestly, IVs. Like, I became, you have no idea how hard it is to give a pregnant woman who's going through labor an IV. They're usually dehydrated, which means their veins are going to be kind of like
Right.
recessed into their skin and hard to find.
Yep.
And also because they're dehydrated, they tend their veins tend to blow out. So you got to be really gentle. It's got to be hard to find them. And I got really good. So when I got to you guys who've got like, tunnels for veins,
Yeah.
I never missed a vein. I was always the guy to go to for veins. The only department that's harder than labor and delivery for giving IVs is cancer. That's for obvious reasons.
Oh. Yeah.
Those veins get weak with chemo.
Right.
But and then but what's funny is I kept telling myself that what am I going to tell my children or my grandchildren when they ask me what I did during the war? I'm going to be like, I delivered babies. And this is stupid, youthful thoughts.
Sure.
And they started asking for, well, we heard rumors that they were going to be asking for volunteers for OIF2. Because the first time they were just like, you go. And it didn't work out too hot. So this time they were like, we wanted to at least ask for volunteers first. So me and my roommates were just like, yo, let's volunteer. And we all did. And then they told me, they called me and like, you're going to Fallujah. And man, it is, that's why I asked what I asked before. Because it's like when they first said, my LPO, my leading petty officer, actually called me up and was like, you got your wish, you're going. Like, you leave at the end of January. And it was just like, oh shit, this just got real.
Did Fallujah, did that word make any sense to you? Did that word
Oh, not
hold?
at the time.
Right. It had
And then
no
I
meaning. It had no meaning when you heard it at
no.
first that it obviously does now.
Yeah, and then I went to like yahoo.com and like asked Jeeves,
Fuck.
not to date ourselves or anything.
Yeah, no shit. These kids, if there's anybody younger listening, just forget it. Google it.
Yeah, exactly. We Googled it
Yeah.
and no, everything about Fallujah was just like, oh man, we're about to go into the valley of the shadow of
Right.
death.
The deadliest city in the world at the time.
At the time, yeah.
So what happens
Yeah.
then? So you get orders to go up to Pendleton?
I did, but something happens where I ended up getting 3 weeks off because they couldn't figure out where I was supposed to go,
Okay.
and my command had already let me go. But so now I finally checked in, and we go to Camp Margarita, and which is like a training center for corpsmen.
Sure.
And they gave us like a 2 week like trauma medicine refresher course. And then they tasked us out to different units. I actually was supposed to be with 3-4 originally.
Really?
And one of my buddies who, I mean, we went through course school together, field med school together. He was one of the guys I was living with. He was in 2-1. And then it was the same situation with these two other guys where one of them was in 3-4 and the other was in 2-1. So we were like, "Yo, you mind if we swap?" And he's like, "I don't care what you homos do."
Yeah. You fucking idiots. If you want to go play fuck with each other, go right ahead.
Right. Right. So, yeah, so that's how I ended up in 2-1.
Wow.
Simply because my boy got stationed with him.
So what is that like?
And then we got
like,
with you guys. What is what like?
I was going to say, what is it like? I know what it's like to show up as a Marine to another unit that you don't know anyone. How's that transition like showing up on the grind or at the barracks or however it happened? Like, this is our new corpsman. Because I remember meeting Camacho. And it was just like, well, we're going to fucking weed him out quick. There's no way he's going to keep up. We're going to run his ass until, you know, because we wanted, at the time, we wanted to try to break him.
Test him.
To make sure he could fucking hang, man. Because if we can do this, if, you know, like physically, if we have to go here, we fucking need you to be like right in the middle of us somewhere, you know? So that was like, unfortunately, that was kind of our mindset. It was like, let's fucking go for a run now and just break him today. We'll get a new one and square somebody else away, you know? So what was it like for you showing up looking at all these motherfuckers, you know, going, who the fuck is this guy?
So it was, it went weird, right? So I won't say his name. You do know him, but I won't say his name right now. I just found out recently who it was, ironically. He was like, "Yeah, I used to do this to Corman." I'm like, "You motherfucker." That was my first moment with the unit. Okay. I'm on the smoke deck, and like our check, like, so we had, you know, the head Corman that got augmented. They're in there talking to everybody to figure out what the hell we're doing. So I'm outside smoking a cigarette in the smoke deck. And a Marine comes up to me, whips his penis out.
Yes.
And he goes, "Doc, I think I got some shit dripping out of my dick." Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, brother, like, you need to go to the AS. You need to go see the doc in there.
Yep. Or introduce yourself, like, motherfucker, you know?
You know? And I'm like, okay, I'm with the Marines.
Yeah.
And then
Doc, I went to Tijuana last weekend and this thing hasn't fucking quit burning since.
Right. And he wasn't kidding. Shit was dripping.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I believe you, bro.
So then it was like kind of routine. It's like we didn't meet the platoon for a couple weeks, actually. We did a bunch of different stuff. Like, we ended up having to get supplies. This is the beauty of the budget of the Marine Corps at the time. They made a decision at a battalion level. They literally debated this in a meeting one time. And I guess this is hearsay. I wasn't there. Right. But what I was told was they only had enough budget left to buy medical supplies or to buy new flak vests with savvy plates.
Yeah.
So medical is basically like, we'll get the medical supplies. You buy the savvy plates because that's going to save lives. Or you buy the flak vest.
Yeah.
So that's why we all had like brand new flak vests going out there, like state-of-the-art shit.
Nice.
But we didn't even have antibiotics. We didn't have IVs. Like, we didn't have most of our med supplies. So they hit us augments up, and we're like, "Can you guys get anything from your previous commands?" So we spent like the first 4 days ransacking our previous commands. I went to Balboa. Like, I ransacked the ER supply room. So I had buddies there. I ransacked labor and delivery supply room because my LPO was prior green side. He just got with blue side. So he was just like, "Anything you want, take it."
Wow.
The only thing we didn't have was antibiotics, and we stole that from the Army. I probably shouldn't say this.
Fuck that.
We strategically acquired that from the Army in Camp, what was it, Camp Victory, I think it was, the one that was right over the Kuwait border.
I the only one I was at was Bull Rush in Kuwait, and that's been renamed, so I don't even know.
Okay. Yeah. No, but yeah, it was the first one. I think it was Camp Victory. But
the reason we don't have a budget is because the fucking Army does. So we can get some antibiotics. It's fine. We're even.
No, exactly.
You know?
No, I was told I would have gotten an award for that if it wasn't shady.
I think you should have gotten an award anyway. Fuck that.
You know?
It's necessary.
But yeah, so all right, so to your actual question. So my first introduction to the platoon was actually to a smaller group of guys at the gun range.
Mm.
They had a pistol range.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time, mind you, that I've ever really shot a pistol.
Sure.
So In field med school, we did fan fire. Like, we shot at a target, but like, so did 10 other people before me. Like, I have no idea where my bullets landed on that target.
Yeah, right, right.
So this is the first time I shot at a target that no one shot at before. And this is the first time and only time that I was shown some techniques and like how to hold it, how to like breach with it.
Sure.
And clear a house with it and all that. Sure. Style showed us. I actually remember that shit to this day, to be honest.
It's important.
But I was not trained in warfare before I got with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was very OJT.
Yeah.
Figuring it out. But
by far the best. Yeah,
you know,
way,
I met some, a lot of the saw gunners and machine gunners were there. And because, you know, they had to learn, they had to do the pistol range.
Yeah.
So that was my introduction. And yeah, people were mostly chill. Carlos was a jerk. Yeah. I did not like Carlos from the beginning.
I didn't either.
And he was doing exactly what you said. He was testing. Yeah. He was trying to, you know, break me and all that.
Yeah.
But we formed a real respect for each other in Fallujah.
He's a hard guy to not find that level of respect, because you know
100% he's a legend.
Yeah, you know, he's so fucking much, he cares so much, and he's so passionate, and he's such a bad motherfucker, and he it's so hard to not love him. So I told you, not to cut you off, I just wanted to riff with you.
No, you're good.
I told you earlier about the boot camp thing and how I was set back a couple, which ended up putting me with those guys. Anyway, when we were in boot camp and we were marching down the road, I remember seeing him because he was always a stockier dude, you know, and being from St. Louis, I wasn't around that many Mexicans. Like, it just, it was, it's pretty much black and white here. Of course, there's Mexican restaurants and shit, but I'm saying in my life, that was my,
no, I got you.
That was more, that was a huge introduction to Mexican Americans, Latinos, the whole gamut, you know, which I think, I think that's pretty normal for most people. It's like you are just dumped into all these different cultures, and it's fucking cool. But I remember seeing him, and he was like this stocky dude and shit. And I'm like, man, fuck him. You don't like other platoons anyways, just cause that's how boot camp works. But you know, I was the guy to my platoon. He was the guy to his platoon. And I remember walking by, I'm like, fuck you, bitch. You know? And so, when I got to SOI and met up with him, I remembered that motherfucker, and he didn't have anything shitty to say, but we kind of just like, who's this motherfucker, you know? And then when we finally started working together up at 2-1, we just hit it off right away. But it wasn't until, I think like 2 years ago, dude, that I said something, and I was like, dude, the thing was, I was just always intimidated by you, you know, because he was like strong, you know, that motherfucker. He's a fucking front door.
Crush your hand if you ain't paying attention.
Yeah. And so I was always like, I was just intimidated by you for a while until I got to know you and shit, just because. And he was like, bro, I had the same shit with you. And so it was really strange, but fuck, I just love him, man. He's just always been there. And you know, we call him Elmer at the reunion in Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's the glue.
He's
absolutely
just kept all this shit rolling, man. And it's been beautiful. And I mean, the whole thing's, he's going back up to the memorial this weekend with another guy who was in golf company.
Yeah, with golf company.
Yeah,
right. He's
man.
Going up like 15 of them.
It's fucking dope, man. So he's just, that's my motherfucker, man. He's, you know, it's just, he's awesome. But yeah, I can see him testing you for sure.
Oh yeah.
Well, and then Doc, think about this too, man. We had boots that came in right before I left, right? So a couple of the guys at these reunions and shit, they're like, yeah, man, I remember you. You fucking ran us real hard. Brown said I yelled at him one time. We were doing a gas mask run, and he took it. He was brand new from the East Coast. He wasn't used to all this altitude and different blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So we're running it. I don't remember this, but that's what he said, and I believe him. But he said he, like, cracked his gas mask. He broke his fucking seal so he could get some fresh air. And I'm like, dude, we had just gotten back from this place where, you know, They were calling for gas on us the first couple of days. Like, we went in there mop fucking four, dude. And so I was like, dude, anyway, he said I yelled at him, but your fucking gas mask on, you know. I'm like, dude, my bad. I knew what you guys needed.
That was your job.
Absolutely.
That was your job.
Absolutely. And they all understood. But yeah, so some of the guys that met you had already been there. So it's like they need to, you know, so that's a good group of fucking dudes to roll in with, you know, because they can prepare you more than anybody else.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had actually a wide range of experience, you know. Yeah, the guys who, you know, that deployed beforehand. But you also had some old salt dogs like Neary, who been in for a long time.
Yeah.
And, like, granted, this was his first deployment, but he was a, you know, stellar Marine.
Sure.
And then, of course, we had great leadership, man. And people talk about other units, and they talk about what was so special about our unit. I think part of what was special was simply just the old cliche of ordinary men in extraordinary situations.
I agree.
I don't think it's so much us, but what I really, if I had to say it was one thing, it was our leadership. We had amazing leadership out there from Captain Zembeck to it was First Sergeant then, right? First Sergeant Skiles,
yeah.
Lieutenant Wagner, freaking Lieutenant Chandler. You know what I mean? Like, we had some great leadership. And even our staff NCOs were, for the most part, on point. And when you have the proper leadership that keeps you in the proper lanes, man, you can really be efficient at what we do.
Of course. I felt that, too, when I showed up, dude. It was like, these motherfuckers were hard. And at first, it's like, fucking chill out. But, like,
a little bit.
once you know why they're doing what they're doing, and then all that did was translate to me when I got boots in, because I'm like, my seniors did this shit to me, and they sometimes they were doing it just to be a dick, but sometimes it was fucking necessary. And so, you know, but you need that fucking hardcore bullshit, man. You gotta fucking, this ain't no place to play around, kids. You know, we're gonna do some really tough shit here, and for me to be cool and let you chill out is not gonna fucking help you. And we all need to be on the same page in this shit, so it's necessary.
I'll tell you where I learned that lesson. Was actually, ironically, about 5 months into the Iraq deployment. We're well into it. You know, at that point, I mean, freaking seasoned warfighters.
Sure.
And I don't know if you know Staff Sergeant Gresham.
I do.
But we're sitting in the Humvee while the Marines do a snap vehicle checkpoint. And we're just hanging out, smoking a cigarette. And at this point, we're real comfortable with each other. And I was just like, Staff, so let me ask you a question. He was just like, yeah. I'm like, why were you, for a lack of better terms, like such a prick backstage side? But like, you're so chill out here. I'm like, I don't get the Jekyll and Hyde routine.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, then you don't understand the Marine Corps. And I was like, you know, do tell. And he's
say
like,
more.
He's like, right. And he's like, my job back stateside is to stress you out. He goes, because we train how we fight, and war is fucking stressful. He goes, but when we're here in war, he goes, again, war is fucking stressful. He's like, so you don't need me stressing you out. He's like, you need me balancing you and calming you down. He's like, that's it. And I was like, man, I kind of hate how simple that is, but yeah, I think I do understand all my training now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You know, just that one little bit of information, like, oh, you were actually trying to stress us out. Like, I wish I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. But imagine if he come up and go, hey, listen, guys, while we're here on Camp Pendleton, safe and sound, we can sleep happy in our little fucking sleeping bags. I'm going to stress you out a little bit. But when we get there, you know what I mean? It wouldn't have fucking worked, because then you'd see right through them, you know?
Right. Yeah. So their job was to stress us out because we train how we fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, wow, okay, I can do that. That makes sense. And then, yay. And then it's like when the new guy comes in, it's like, all right, let's stress this motherfucker out.
Right. See, and I've heard rumors about these stress cards in boot camp. I don't, even if somebody
that's
shows
done. Me. That was like only for a little bit.
See, and I was going to say, even if somebody showed me one, I'm still not going to buy into it just because I don't think the Marine Corps is going to fucking, anyway. But exactly, dude, that's the whole point. If this shit was easy, just everybody would do it. You know, they've got to send the weirdest of the weirdos in fucking first, you know, and it's got to be what it is, man. It's supposed to be fucked up. It's supposed to be tough and scary and hard.
Exactly.
You know,
Robert E. Lee, he said, if war was not so horrific, men would grow to love it. And that's the biggest truth. This is not meant to be a game. This is meant to be horrific.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd be doing it all the fucking time.
Yeah. And it's an ugly fucking thing, man.
Yeah.
It's an ugly fucking thing. But
it's funny though. I was talking to Dion Miller recently. And I was actually talking to someone else too, but it came up again with her. And the person was saying war is inherently evil. And I could not disagree more. War itself is not evil. Evil comes out of it, sure. But war is the attempt to stop genocide. Because you can't have war without someone fighting back. You know, if someone doesn't fight back, it's just genocide. They just kill everyone.
Okay.
So war can't be evil because half of who is fighting war is fighting a just cause.
Well, both sides believe their cause is just.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's times where that's true, where both sides find it. But there's often the aggressor. There's often the person invading, and that is the evil one, as the person bringing war.
Right, okay, I'm with you. Yeah.
So like Russia, for example. It's funny, this Russia-Ukraine situation is very confusing, for lack of better terms. You know, it's hard to find where you stand on it. Like, no, I'm not just supporting Russia, but at the same time, I mean NATO, trying to push them into a corner where this was one of their limited options. But they still brought an evil act to Ukraine.
Yeah. You know,
there is still evil coming out of their invasion. Now, if Ukraine did not fight back, it wouldn't be a war. You know what I mean? So,
okay.
To be war, someone has to defend themselves.
Right. Okay. That's interesting.
Otherwise, it's just genocide.
I've
never
heard it put that way. Yeah. Huh. I got to say, man, I don't do politics. I don't watch the news. I'm on zero social media. But just from a fighting and a numbers and a money standpoint, I know we're helping them out. But I'm proud of them motherfuckers for keeping in this fight for so long, dude. They're doing good. You know what I mean?
You can't be nothing but proud of Ukrainians.
They were supposed to get mowed over, like you said,
put all the politics aside. They are standing toe-to-toe with what was supposed to be the second most powerful military on Earth.
Right.
Which we know that ain't true anymore. But still, they're a powerful military, nonetheless.
I mean, the dudes are fucking fighting.
They got a fighting spirit.
Yeah.
They've always had a fighting spirit, though, to be fair.
They've always been in some shit. You got to give it to them, though, man. I mean, fucking yeah. Boys. Keep at it.
Yeah. Do your thing.
Or don't. My I wish all is, war would stop, but, you know.
Well, I mean, sure, right? But again, then it's just genocide.
Yeah.
But I don't want us to be involved, but I do support them. Like, kick ass. You know?
Well, dude, I mean.
Defend your shit.
Yeah, people came into our house would be doing the same thing. So you can't blame them
exactly. Either
way, you know.
Exactly.
Doc.
But,
I just want to get to this, because I want to spend some time on it, if you don't mind.
Dude,
anytime you just want to talk, I've been very clear on here. I was not with you guys in Fallujah, so I don't bring it up a lot. But anytime you want to get on here, if you ever want to tell good, funny, or the terrible, we can always do that. And I would love to have you back for fucking 15 episodes, bro. It's been a lot of fun and I know we've got days and days of talking to do. However, I do want to get to legacy so we can spend some time.
Yeah.
How did this thing roll out? Where the fuck is this beautiful concept from?
Man, it's 20 years in the making is the best way to put it.
How's that? You know, where did it start?
This started with small reunions that we were putting on, you know, it kind of started like, all right, it's like me and Carlos would be up people's butts for a second platoon reunion or like a SoCal reunion, whoever was in Southern California.
Right. Regional.
Right. And then Shoemate was actually doing the same thing, like Shoemate and Brown. By Shoemate for the audience, I mean, Heath Shoemate and Christopher Brown, which are the two other co-founders of Legacy.
Yeah.
And we were all kind of meeting up separately. And then Shoemate is the one who is like, let's bring it together and like do a larger reunion. And he helped plan the 10-year reunion at Pendleton with Skiles. And that was a fun reunion. And that kind of got us started just realizing how important it was to see each other, how great we felt being around each other again, the closure that came out of it, you know, like, up until that reunion, I hadn't ran into anyone that I saved personally. You know, like either they were going to be fine either way or they died. There's very few people who the things I did actually saved them. You know, and it's a kind of thing we don't really talk about as corners. Like, it's the rule of three. Most people, you come up and whatever you do, they were going to live no matter what. And you're just banding them up, making sure they don't get an infection. And then there was something that no matter what you did, they were going to die. Anyway.
Okay.
You know, and then it's that middle third that you can actually work a little magic for if you do the right thing.
Wow. What's it, you know, and, what's it like running into a dude 10, 5, 10, 15, 20 years later that like definitely would not be married, would not have kids, would not have a Harley or whatever the fucking, whatever our brothers are doing in their lives right now. What's it like running into a brother that you know, and he knows for a fact he would not be breathing air and talking to you had you not done what you did. I mean, that's gotta be fucking amazing, man.
It was. And I didn't realize how much I needed it, you know, and ran into Zach Fincannon, who got hurt on the 26th and he lost his arm. He's got a hook now.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest moments was him walking up the hill with another one of our guys, Shoal, who was worked on by a different corpsman. And he did not have kids before the deployment. So it, had that corpsman not worked on him, he would have been dead.
Wow.
That kid wouldn't have been born. And Shoal's kid is holding Fincannon's hook while walking up the hill.
Wow.
And that was my moment. That was like, it actually really did like choke me up a bit.
Yeah,
dude. You know, and it's just like, all right, like good things came out of this.
Sure.
You know,
my kids don't know Fincannon, but they love him from the photos. Like they're so interested on how that thing works and shit. You know, like, they're like, is he all right? I'm like, look at him. He seems to be doing fucking fine to me. He's always having fun when I see him.
Yeah, he isn't having. He even has an adapted Harley where he can ride with that thing.
Yeah. That's got to be pretty.
Yeah,
powerful,
he builds
man.
Guns. Yeah, he's all in it. But yeah, you know, and like we wanted to keep that going, you know. But reunions are hard and they're expensive, and you don't really know how to plan them. So we relied on other organizations, to plan reunions for us. But because of that, it only really happened about every 5 years. And really like 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
We kept pushing for more and more reunions. We actually got one of the organizations started on the reunions. They'll remain nameless. But we were the reason that they do reunions now. But
wow.
It's a weird thing to complain about. But one of the problems is that they roll out the red carpet for us. And, you know, it's because they want to show their appreciation, and I get it.
Sure.
But the problem with that is that the red carpet's very expensive. And the reunion that they were putting on for us cost like $300,000, not counting airfare.
Wow.
And it's like, well, yeah, no wonder you only want to do this every 5 years. That's freaking expensive.
Yeah. You can only write off so much as a company. I mean, I'm guessing, I don't know, but.
Well, this company gets a lot of donations.
Okay. Anyway.
So, you know, that was cool and all. And we were supposed to do one after COVID, and it kind of got ruined, obviously, because of COVID, and like only 17 people showed up.
Yeah.
That was in 2021.
Was that Colorado?
That was the second Colorado.
Okay.
Only like 17 people showed up to. That was supposed to be like 70.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was 70 in June of 2020 when they did a little poll. You know what I mean? Like they didn't follow through on that properly.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, when our 20th came up, they were like, no thanks. And I actually should back up a little bit. What ended up happening was last April happened first. And what I mean by last April for the audience is I was living in Argentina and I was coming back through Texas to apply for a visa out of Houston for Italy. And I figured I'd hit up my Texas boys. A lot of Marines in Texas.
Sure.
And, you know, I figured it'd be about like 8 to 10 of us meeting up at like a cabin by a lake or something, just hanging out for a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people found out about it, the more people were like, can I come? And it was like, well, yeah, this was never about being exclusionary. We were just, you know, doing something regional. And then it kept growing to the point where we had like 20 something people. And I was like, okay, we need something better. And Shoemate recommended Broken Bow, Oklahoma, which is like a little resort village built up for stuff like this. And we, as you know, ended up renting two cabins. We had like 50 people, or no, that was like 60. It was like 60 people.
There's a lot, dude.
It only cost us $11,000, and that was including food. Now, granted, food wasn't catered. One of the mistakes we made was making everybody make their own food. Yeah, but
we figured it out.
Even with it catered, it would still only come out to about $350 a person, the way we figured out how to do it. Mm-hmm. And that reunion was not lacking. That had a red carpet of its own kind.
Oh, dude.
You know, it was nice. The house was nice. The pool table, the hot tubs, the fire pit.
It was amazing.
It was amazing.
The creek.
And, right, the creek, the nice, like, the woods, the calm setting.
The whole back of the house was a fucking party deck. Do you remember that? It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And just the country out there. And I'm from Missouri. Oklahoma's right there. But it's like, it was beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. And we walked away being like, and that's when I actually found out how much the Colorado reunions cost. I asked Schumann because he helped them plan them. And I was, he was just like $300,000 for the first one. I was like, what? And that, again, that wasn't even counting airfare.
It's a big number.
That's a big number. And it's like, you know how many, we did this for, even if we do it for a full 15,000, like, guys, that's, we could do a lot of reunions for $300,000.
We are older, and we, some of our guys need, you know, some, what do you call that special? Like, I mean, not really, but like, you know, we are still the same motherfuckers. We can tough it out for a weekend.
We're still grunts.
You know what I'm saying? We don't need snowmobiles. Yeah, we had guys
sharing king-size beds. Yeah. And not because we made them. Like, guy, they were like, hey, let's make it cheaper. Let's split us a king-size.
Yeah, we're all right. We've seen each other naked a lot.
And what we need. Sadly so.
Yeah.
But what we need to spend time with each other.
Yeah.
And if we do these reunions every year, which we can afford them if they're $15,000 to $20,000.
Right.
And we do this every year. What's cool is you don't have to come every year. But this time, if you miss a reunion, it's not like you see me in 10 years, because we only do these every 5.
Right.
If you can miss two, and you'll still see me in 3 years. You know, and the biggest part of this, and this is what came out of our reunion, is the more and more we went, the more people we got to come. You know, you're a perfect example of it. You almost didn't come to both reunions.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact they impacted you, and I know for a fact that you being there impacted other people.
Dude, I mean, I'll talk about it. I wanted to talk about it a little bit with you anyways, just because. Yeah. And we'll stay on legacy, but this is the story of fucking legacy. So
no, like, this is the story, and I'm in no rush.
Okay. Yeah, the first one, as you know, we talked a little bit. I hadn't even met you. That was where I first met
you.
And
right. We only knew each other's names from other people talking about us.
And knew you very well, just didn't know you. I had never shook your hand or hugged you before. But it was like that thing where, and now after this one that just happened a few weeks ago, a lot of healing has been done. But at that time, I felt and I knew that all these dudes are my brothers. Even if I never met Doc Leota, he's still a brother of mine, because I know what he's done for my other brothers, and that makes us fucking family, like it or not. But
absolutely,
I could not share that experience of Fallujah. You know what I mean? There were so many things that I was a part of the first, blah, blah, blah. I had all these things and all these hangups, and Carlos has been telling me for all these years, again, fucking Elmer's glue has been telling me for all these years, man, stop with, dude, I promise you, no one is would ever say, blah, 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 and it's just a...
Nor have they thought it.
I don't.
That's all in your head,
bro. I believe you now. I mean, I do believe that 100% now. But yeah, you're right. It was a me thing. I left and I had to do what I had to, and all that other stuff. But like when I showed up to Broken Bow, it was like, open arms and laughing again. And I mean, just a fucking blast. And I had huge, huge healing and forgiveness and just so many words to describe how good I left there different. I left there a different person. I came home a different man.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
And this last one, reunion at Pendleton, I mean, the memorials at Pendleton, I podcast all about this, so you guys know what I'm talking about. But I got to talk to a few people, like I said on the last podcast, my platoon commander, and he told me some things that I did share on the podcast, and he told me some things that I didn't. And I that was the first time since I went home that I was truly able to start going, okay, man, you did what was right. You know you did what was right. You know what the outcome probably would have been had you not made the decision. All these things that I just, for some reason, I needed to hear another man tell me. And wow. You and Carlos and Terry and da-da-da, Dave, all the guys said this shit to me. But I guess I needed to, I guess, what is Wagner right now? I cannot stand saying the major. Wrong rank. Okay, Major. Okay, well, then I was right. I guess Major Wagner, being my platoon commander, my leader, I guess was the last, you know, the cherry on top or whatever bullshit I'm trying to say, but... Hearing him tell
me, makes sense though.
You know, hearing him tell me some of the things that he told me, it was just like, all right, so I've just fucking mentally tortured myself for 20 years. This has been great, you know. But that was all part of
Well, we all do.
Yeah. But
that's the real truth. Yeah. This is one of my favorite quotes. I might mess it up, but the spirit's the same.
Hit me.
But it's a petty man judges others. A great man judges himself.
Well,
you know, so, you know, it's a mark of a good person that you're out here judging yourself. Now we got to get past that. We got to move. We got to grow and all that. But to say that, you know, you spent the last year, 20 years judging yourself versus judging the world, it's a better response.
Right.
You know,
I'm with you. But again, I came home from California. I'm different now. And some things have changed for me personally and in such a good way. And it's like, fuck, you know, it's just this weight. And I'm running right next to you here, Doc. What you're doing and what I know and what you know and what all of our guys know is how important this is. And I'm not trying to sell anyone anything here. If you don't want to get together with your unit, I guess I can't really change your mind on that. But what Doc,
I will say this. I would like to try and change your mind.
Oh,
on
for
that.
Sure. No, I'm going to try like hell. But like, if you're just not going to listen and take our words,
right.
I'm sorry, because you fucking need this, man. And it's so beautiful to do.
And I'll say this. I'll say that if I could take the mic for a moment.
Dude, it's yours.
I've been talking to probably it's 200 people. So like probably like 120 veterans for the last 6 months. It was just harassing you guys. Some more than others.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys who are like, I don't need it. And I'm like, you know, first off, my favorite thing to say is it recharges batteries that you didn't even know were empty.
Sure.
You know, and you show up to these unions and you're like, oh man, I feel great. And that feeling goes down, you know. And then by the time you get to the next reunion, your batteries are kind of empty. And you come to the next reunion, you're like, you're recharging again. It's so great again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the idea. It's like when people, like I was talking with Brown, actually. And he was saying, you know, when I was a kid, I used to go to family reunions all the time. He's like, and they were great. He's like, and then things happened and we stopped going, blah, blah, blah. He's like, and that's what it felt like, though, at this last reunion. It felt like a family reunion.
Absolutely.
You know, he's like, you're so happy to see these people. And he's like, and it's actually better than family reunion. Like, you know, family reunion, there's drama, there's this, there's that. He's like, there's nothing but love at these reunions.
Especially
this last one. We had the family members there.
Dude.
I know not everybody could make it.
Yeah.
But the ones that did show up, it was special. It was precious to watch their children playing.
Oh. Like, Kosai's kid, there were tons of kids.
Right, Kosai's, Boykins.
Yeah, there were tons of kids that made it up. It just so happened that I was right behind Kosai's family. And watching his wife and kids just scale the microwave like beasts, I was like, I got up at the top and I'm like, you guys are monsters in the best possible form of the word. Like, as a family, you guys are awesome. And they're like, okay, dude, you know, but I'm like, no, I'm serious, yeah. man. Watching you kids work that hard and his wife, they were just bad. It's fucking awesome, man.
It really was. I saw them going.
Carlos's daughter, fucking, I mean, she's running. I was like, get out of here, man. It was so amazing to see.
It really was. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who, there's a couple guys who I flat out were just like, you know, man, like, let's say for argument's sake, you don't need this, that you're good. Others need you to show up.
Yeah.
You might be someone else's closure.
Yeah. Good point.
You know, and I'm like, I don't want to put that on you because that is a little heavy for some people, but like that is the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, Finn Cannon was my closure. Sure. I needed Finn Cannon to show up to these reunions without even knowing I needed it.
Wow.
And, you know, we're the best of brothers. He calls me almost every, pretty much every 26th of April, he calls me and says, thanks for saving my life.
I can't imagine. And
it used to embarrass me. And now I look forward to it.
Oh, please be proud, because that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, but you know how it is.
I know, I'm with you, but, you know, as an outside telling you, it's so beautiful. Like, I don't know, that's just awesome.
It is. And there's so many guys who showed up to this reunion for the first time, especially this one. Like, we've never had more than 60 people. We had 150 people plus at this reunion.
It was dope.
And some people left, and then other people came on the other days. So I think we had a total of like 180, if you can, you know, count everybody.
Right.
And so many people were like, I came begrudgingly. And they're so happy they came. They reformed relationships. They lost, you know, like First Platoon didn't even keep in touch hardly. Now they've got a group chat and they're all talking. Some of the guys from Weapons Platoon are meeting up in North Carolina in a month or so. I'm meeting up with some guys in San Antonio. So it's not just about these annual reunions. It actually spawns us to be in each other's lives.
Right.
And we go from guys who served together once to my functioning and current community.
Yeah.
You know, not a bunch of guys isolating themselves who went through. I mean, you know, I know everybody feels important. I get that. I have to check myself sometimes where it's just like, yeah, you think you're important. No one else does.
Yeah.
But this, we went through the craziest times of our lives with each other, and we're sitting out here just blowing in the wind, isolating, when we could be going through it together. The same way we went through it together overseas.
Right. And when you get you out know? Here, and I've said it so many times, well, I definitely back in my, like, my addiction days and stuff, but nobody understands me. Nobody out here can understand me. It's like, well, why don't you jump on a plane and go to this beautiful paradise? I don't care whether you're talking about Broken Bow, Oklahoma, or Southern California.
Right, we're gonna find other places. Yeah. Exactly.
But why don't you show up to this place and start right over, right where you left off 20 years ago, with a bunch of people who not only understand you, but love you and are there for you still. And it's like, you know, there, we can do this to where you can be around these people who understand you and know what you're going through and get a lot of help from 3 days, 2 days, one fucking day, man. One long day can do a lot.
Right. Can do a lot. And I'll say this to get a little bit more back towards legacy. It does not have to be a large unit reunion. You know, that's what we just experienced, so we're hyped on it.
Yeah.
But this can be two guys. Like, this does not have to be a large thing. Some people did not have good relationships with their unit. Some people didn't go through epic times. Mm-hmm. And they just served on an airfield with somebody who was their best friend, and they lost touch with that guy, and they'd love to get together with him, and then maybe they go fishing or whatever. Hit us up. Hit our fucking website up. Put it in an application. I don't care if you were combat, not combat. I don't care if you were on an airfield in 1992 in North Dakota and you want to meet up with a group of guys you can't forget about. Hit us up.
Doesn't matter what branch.
Doesn't matter what branch, what generation. Doesn't matter combat or not combat. You know, right now and probably for a long time, we're not going to be able to just straight up pay for these reunions because we're in the infancy of our organization.
Yeah.
But We're really good at fundraising. We can help your unit fundraise. We can help you event plan, which is way harder than I thought it was going to be, but we're getting really good at.
I can't imagine, yeah.
And, you know, I want to be facilitators and event planners and fundraisers for these guys. So even if we don't have the funds to pay for your reunion outright, we can make it so it's only $250 a person.
Right.
You know, and maybe do a t-shirt campaign like we did. We raised almost $10,000 with that t-shirt campaign. Did you know that?
Good. No, I didn't, but that's awesome.
Yeah, and everybody got t-shirts and hoodies out of it.
Yep. I got some in my closet. Yeah, so
it's a win-win.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I love it. I wear those things with pride. It's got our brothers' names on the back of them. Dude,
they're beautiful. And you can do that. You can do that for anyone's unit, right? You guys can custom all that stuff.
So what with the flags of our fallen, we're going to kind of keep that specific to First Marines.
Giddy up.
If someone really wants it, you know, we'll make exceptions. But the truth is we would like to customize a shirt for your specific reunion, for your specific unit, something that actually touches you guys. And we could still put your names on it, of your fallen and all that. But
if you aren't from a unit with good for you. If you don't have a bunch of fallen, I'm very happy that that's the case. But
right, it's a
maybe
great thing.
Maybe your unit logo or whatever. Get with these guys and we'll come up with something. They'll come up with something.
Exactly. Like we have one group of guys that wanted their unit logo, and then have it. What was it? Something like in my brothers I will trust. And they wanted that slogan. You know, it's like, cool, that's for you guys.
Perfect.
Let's do it.
You're the only ones in the world. Well, maybe not the only ones in the world, but it's yours. You know, it's your unit thing. It's going back to...
Right. No one else is wearing these shirts.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the barracks you lived in. Nobody else is fucking staying in there. It's yours, you know?
Right. So, you know, and I say this to some people and they're like, that's kind of big thing you're trying to, you know, chew off. And I'm like, yeah. It's definitely wearing over our heads. But, like, when weren't we? I was in over my head in Fallujah. I've been in my head most of my life.
Good point.
I know we have grandiose plans, and I don't care. We'll keep them going until we achieve them, you know? I can't wait, because the truth is this isn't about, oh, I think this is a fun thing to do. This isn't about I want to see my brothers. This is – I fundamentally have come to the understanding that this is mental health. Yep. This is how we fight the 22 a day suicide problem. Yep. This, you know, it's more than that. When we call each other, we're not honest. And anybody listening knows what I mean. Mm-hmm. You call your brother, you do your little buddy check-in. Whenever somebody calls you and you're in the darkest moments of your life, you say, I'm doing fine, brother.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you'll squeeze out things have been rough, but I'm good. You know, and it's a lie. But when we see each other in person, I can see it on your face. I can see it on your body. I can see the stress or the lack thereof. And we can do proper buddy checks. Or if you keep not showing up to reunions, I now know whose door to go knock on.
Yep.
You know, tell me to fuck off to my face. That's fine. I'm still going to check on you.
Right. You said worse.
Right. You know, and that's what Carlos did. We won't say with who, but that's what Carlos did with one of our guys who was kind of lost. He just, nope, I'm going.
He
drove halfway across the country. Oh, that's right. He was already in the area.
Hey,
right.
Fuck, he was still, eight. He went 8 hours.
He drove 8 hours to the right. Right. And parked on his curb stop. What do you call it? That's how we keep guys from killing themselves. You know, is by actually caring about each other.
Yeah.
You know, and this is how we do it. And this is how we start it. And that's the thing. It's not the end. These reunions aren't the end and the beginning. This is just the start.
Yeah.
And then we stay in each other's lives.
And having grandiose ideas and plans, would Google be what it is? Would Amazon be? Amazon just sold fucking books a long time ago. You know what I mean? So obviously you're not going to let that push you down, but you know, just a little thing, starting this podcast, people are like, well, nobody's going to listen. It's like, hey, man, fuck
that. Somebody will.
I'm doing it for me because I like to talk to people and not for me, but I like to talk to people. And this is it's a creative endeavor that I need. I do my physical, I need something creative to do. So it's like, but if you go around listening to all the negativity, which I know you don't, you know, it's not going to get you anywhere for sure. So it's like, we're going to try. Yeah. And as a unit, we've done some fucked up things. Right. And we got photos to prove otherwise, so.
Hell yeah. Oh, man, this reunion went off. And it's funny because it didn't go off without a hitch. But one of the great things is that no one knew what didn't go the way we wanted.
Really? That's good.
Yeah, but I mean, nothing went bad. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, you have plans.
Well, if we ever plan anything that goes lessons. Exactly perfect, I don't even know what to say to that. You know what I mean? It's always going to
I'm a perfectionist.
I know you are. I know you are. So, hey,
it went great.
Apps better than great. If people are listening and they don't know how can so and so help? What they might not know anybody and they might not know what to do. What would be a way? How do they contact you? What's a good thing that you'd like to tell people that maybe aren't in the community, but they are listening to this going, fuck man, this Doc Leota guy's got a good idea and I think it's good for people. How could he or she help?
Yeah. The biggest way, and I know this sounds cliche, everybody has their hands out. But the biggest thing you can do to help us with is donations. We are completely voluntary. Everybody that works here is voluntary. We're actually all 100% disabled veterans, including, I mean, it's funny to say our volunteers because everyone's volunteering. But we also have other guys who are actual, like just strictly volunteers. They'll stay volunteers. And it's all 2-1 so far, which is really cool. But
where do we go to donate?
LegacyMilitaryReunions.org.
Okay.
If you type in Legacy Military Reunions into Google, sadly, our official website doesn't just pop up yet. We're still working that out with Google. But our Facebook page, our Instagram page, all that pops up. Our website's on our social media. But LegacyMilitaryReunions.org. And we have a donation tab on there. We have our application tab where you can apply for a reunion. You could even hit us up about maybe you have a loved one that you want to contact us about to get a reunion started for them. You can contact us. Another thing I really want to plug about our page, and this is important to all the veterans or family members of veterans listening. We have a veteran resource page on our website. And to me, this is one of the things I'm most proud about actually right now. We have over 300 veteran organizations on there that it's a range of organizations from financial services, you know, you need financial emergency aid, to transportation to get to your VA appointments, to training, mentor programs, programs for service dogs, programs for women veterans, job hunting, like activities, retreats. You go on there, it's ridiculous how much is on there. I had no idea there was this many resources available to us. And this is not everything. We're still adding to it. We still have organizations contacting us, asking to be added to it. But if you have any need as a veteran, if your veteran in your life has any need, please go to our website. Please check out the services listed. There is so much help out there for us.
Yep.
And sometimes it's just so hard to find. Like I had no idea most of these organizations existed. Like I'm going to get a free tattoo. I'm going to try at least.
Is that right?
But there's an organization out there that does free tattoos for combat veterans.
Our brother ours got a whole new set of teeth.
Yeah,
and
right.
They look
right.
dope.
Brother got a whole suit. They do look dope.
I was like, hook me up, cuz.
And there's a lot of organizations out there for caregiver support. Let's give a shout out to all the wives,
and
children of our veterans. They take care of us. They go through our trauma with us.
They're as much a part of it as we are.
100%, and it traumatizes them. And there's programs out there to help them with that. There's programs out there to help financially. There's programs out there to help wives be trained for jobs
beyond
what they're already trained for.
Yeah.
But please, guys, if you have a need, look for it. And our site's a great start. And we don't get anything for this list. It just, you hit the link, it sends you to their page. That's all it is. We just want to make sure our guys know what's accessible to them.
Yeah. Don't want anything for it. Just want to help people.
That's it.
I say on this podcast,
we want to become a resource for veterans.
Right.
Truly.
I say on my bio for this podcast, I want to have fun and help people. And whether that's talking about working out or addiction or mental health or whatever, like I don't care where this thing goes and who's listening, but I hope anyone that is, and I've gotten a little bit of feedback from a couple people that were like, I laughed and cried and this and that. And I'm like, that I could stop right now and be completely happy with just helping one person. But these guys aren't looking for, you know, fame, and they just want to help, and we just want to help, you know. So,
and I will say, we are getting something out of it. There's no such thing as nothing, right?
I'm talking
feel so. I,
you're not going to get a fucking Bugatti tomorrow.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
This is purely existential pride that I get out of it.
Yeah.
I have a sense of purpose again. Of course. I haven't had for a long time. And I think that's the most of what I'm getting out of this. But, you know, that and just the satisfaction that our brothers are going to be better because of this. And who knows what's going to grow out of this.
Dude.
The connections that we're making are exponential.
I can't wait to see more and more and more,
Me neither. Yeah.
Hey, what about social media? Will you say that real quick?
Yeah, it's Legacy Military Reunions on Facebook, on Instagram. We're growing. We're actually on all of them. Twitter, Thread. Well, I guess Twitter is X now. But we are on all the social media platforms. The best one to communicate with on is probably Facebook. But our website is always the best. Again, I will plug that one more time. Legacy Military Reunions with an S.org.
Okay, but you said this. You said this earlier on the Facebook page. There is a hyperlink to go, right?
Correct. Okay, so cool. If you just Google our name, Facebook, Instagram, there's our links are all over that place.
All right, cool, good deal.
And our phone number is all over the place. We have a toll free number. If anybody wants to call toll free, it's 888-437-8182. We answer pretty much all the time. We really don't have business hours. Yeah, I'm awake. I'm answering the phone.
Yeah. It's wild.
But, yeah, man, we already started. You know, we know what our next one's going to be like for us. Our next one's in April 2025. Can't wait.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing 1-4's reunion. We're helping them in August.
All right.
I want to plug another organization, if you don't mind.
It's yours, brother. You got the mic. I have no time limit, so take it.
22 Jumps. This is another organization started by 2-1 veterans. They were with Steel Curtain. We've teamed up with them, and we're going to be working with them going forward. They do base jumping, skydiving, slacklining across canyons in Utah. And they do this to raise funds for TBI research. And they're not just doing fundraising. They're also collecting data. So the veterans that come to their events, they have them, you know, take surveys and very specific questions to collect data for the VA. It's all anonymous.
Yeah.
But and they're lobbying with Congress. These guys are one of the leading organizations pushing change for TBI. And for those that don't know, TBI is traumatic brain injuries. But we're partnering with them. We're going to start being the ones to find the guys for them, and they're going to put on the event. So I'm really proud of that partnership. Proud that it's more 2-1 guys changing the world.
I didn't even know about this one, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah, we're going to be putting one on in Veterans Day this year. We're not quite sure who yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, Veterans Day this year, we're putting on an event.
Wow.
And it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Bro, do you have anything else that you want to plug? Anything else you want to say? Any kind of notes you got?
I think that's pretty much it, man.
I don't want to keep you too long. I know you got stuff going on, but
I do have one thing. It's a weird thing to bring up.
Come on, dude.
After all that,
it ain't weird.
But if
I promise.
Get back to one of the things we were talking about earlier.
Come on.
Which is the one of the reasons why I think reunions is so important, right? Like I was asking my wife before this, like, what should I make sure I hit on, and she was like, the why. It's the why that's the most important. She's 100% correct.
Absolutely.
Getting out, and I think you'll identify with this a lot. I listened to your last podcast, and you said stuff that really related with this.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get out of the military, I don't care if you served in combat or not. You know, 99% of the military did not serve in combat.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out of the military is defined by loss. You lose your sense of purpose. You lose your sense of usefulness. You lose your sense of being attached to such a prideful organization.
These people and depending on me.
Right. But you also lose these guys who, you know, there's no reason you should have met them in any other circle.
Never.
You know, but you've been, for a lack of better terms, you've been trauma bonded with these men.
Yeah.
And again, whether you were in combat or not, the military likes to trauma bond you, make you work as a unit. And, you know, and then we split up. And we go across the country and we deal with these situations, these life situations isolated. And what's crazy about that is the what made us good military members makes us kind of bad civilians. Those instincts that make us a good fighter. It doesn't exactly ebb with society. So not only are you isolated from your brothers, you're also isolated from society because you think differently than they do.
Yeah.
And I think that's genuinely why the 22 a day statistic, which is actually a higher statistic. They never counted Texas, New York, and California, which is like the highest population of veterans. We'll just stick with the 22.
Yeah, it's a good number, and people know it now, so it's like, you know.
But I think the biggest reason why you have a lot of not combat veterans killing themselves is because of this that we're talking about here. It's because of the loss that comes with getting out of the military and how we don't properly go about it. We don't have real communities to handle, you know, like, yeah, usually, you know, hardcore combat units do their reunions, but that's about it. Mm. So as much as our first couple of reunions are going to be combat units, and it's because they're the easier ones to get attention, we genuinely, genuinely want to get together non-combat veterans.
Of course.
We want to break this stigma that only combat veterans are worthy of these retreats or these veteran services. And it's like, no, we all signed the dotted line to put our life. I don't give a shit if you went to combat. We couldn't have done our job without everybody else doing their job.
Absolutely. You know, and they all support.
You don't get to be the most powerful nation on earth without having support.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a handful of grunts. I'm telling you that much.
Correct. So I really want all listeners, you know, I want these guys who served in the Navy, who served in the Air Force, who served in the Marines and didn't go to combat, or the Army and didn't go to combat. I really want you guys to hear me when I say we would like to get you and your brothers together.
Hell yeah.
That is all I got.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more.
Yeah.
And there's this thing now, I'll add to that. Social media, of course. Hollywood, of course. YouTube, I don't know if that's social media or entertainment, whatever it is, but you know, a long time ago, no one really even knew that Delta was it was a myth. It was a ghost thing that some people made up and then they talked about
Chuck Norris movie.
Yeah. It didn't even officially exist. Now, how many Delta dudes have YouTube channel? Look, I think it's great. I think the GBRS guys, I watch them a lot. A lot of good workout stuff. There's a lot of good weapons training and safety. And I think those dudes are all doing great things. Please don't get me twisted up with a bunch of fucking SEALs and Delta guys. But you know what I mean? But there's this thing where everyone's seeing who's got the biggest dick in the room. And
a little bit.
And it's like, Okay, obviously not everyone, but it's like there's that thing where, you tend to hear it often when someone goes, hey, that's my buddy I was telling you about that was in Iraq or something. You go, oh, well, I never fought, but I'm like, whoa, man. You do not need to explain. Like, you're still a bad motherfucker, you know? So, like, there's maybe some of that going on to where people go, like, well, that's for those door kicker guys. And it's like, no.
That's exactly what's happening.
The bond is still the same, you know?
Yeah. Only 1% of our country served in the armed forces.
Yeah. It's a very small amount.
You're a part of this 1%. You're our brother.
Yeah.
Whether you served in, and you're right. So many guys I've talked to who know I served in Fallujah or whatever, they will qualify their service with being like, well, I didn't do what you did. Like, no, cool. I didn't do what you did either, brother. Like, we all served.
Yeah. You know who says something pretty good is Cody Alford, who was at our reunion.
Yeah, it was great seeing him.
Yeah. I didn't know him either. I knew him from YouTube and stuff.
Well, yeah, he was a boot. When you were there, he was like a fresh boot.
Yeah. But he was saying something to the effect of, when is it enough? When have you done enough? Why, you know, and he's into positive mindset and stuff like that, you know, but saying how, well, you know, I invaded in 03. I was part of that, the sixth vehicle to invade or whatever. And we did this and we did that, but I never went to Baghdad. I never was in one of Saddam's palaces. excuse me.
I used to think the same thing.
Right. What he was saying was, dude, like that, you know what I mean? Like, kind of like that's his thing. That's his story. Like, but it doesn't take away from yours.
Nope.
You know, so like, we don't need to flex on each
other. No, you still drove by the gates of Babylon.
Yeah. We don't have to flex and like compare all it. It's like, dude, it's all good. You know, I have no problem. Well, I was going to go to the Marines. Oh, hey, man, I don't put people down. I know some people interbranch. It's all fun for us, but I know some people take that shit seriously. And I'm like, dude, I agree that everyone in the United States military is supporting that infantry push. I couldn't be more grateful to postal clerks and cooks and supply dudes and like all those people are the fucking shit, dude. So I have never put anyone like pussy. That don't come out of my mouth. Right. I don't like that shit either.
Our flyboys used to save our ass in the ninth hour.
Yeah, flyboy my ass when shit is fucked up and you see two Cobras coming in on a truck with a 50, their Russian 50 cal thing, whatever it was, 47 or 49.7 millimeter mounted, and those Cobras kick their. It looked like two Hornets to me, and they just, I mean, they're, you know, the story, but it's like, those are badass dudes. You know what I mean? Like, those are my motherfuckers.
Hey, I'll tell you a really cool story.
Please.
It's the 21st of April, 2004. And we are pushing up to, basically we keep taking sniper rounds from these couple houses. So we're like, well, we're going to push up. We're going to demolish these houses. And, there was six of us. It was me, Sergeant Magana, Carpenter, and his fire team. So Sealstead was there. Hankins was there, and I think Boykin. And we're out in the middle of the street. And as we're running, it's what we call a danger zone. As we're in the middle of the danger zone, the whole world just opens up a fire. Bullets whizzing right by our heads. And, you know, if you can see tracers, for every one tracer, what is that, like every two bullets?
Two to three.
There's three
rounds.
Bullets for every one. Right.
Yep.
You know, so bullets are flying by your head. And we cut to the right and took cover. And we're taking these rounds. And without telling you the entire story, the point of this is we got air cover. And it was two Cobras and a Huey. And they were lighting these guys up. They kept taking circular passes. You know, they'd pass them, light them up, come back around. And they kept doing this. And the Huey got lit up hard on the tail and almost started smoking. And you saw them starting to veer off their course of that circular pattern. Mm-hmm. They were veering off of it. And then all of a sudden, they went back and they did one more pass. And then they limped off after that. And I tell you, like, I remember sitting there, and it's funny because, like, I'm separated from my unit, and I actually was literally by myself in this yard. But that's, like, that's a separate story. But I'm by myself, and I'm watching these helicopters do this. And it's just, like, I can only imagine the conversation in that cockpit, you know, where they're like, we should bail. Everything in us says leave. Our helicopter's going down. We were hit. And they were like, no, let's give them one more pass. Let's help these boys on the ground one more time.
Dude, I mean, enough said, you know?
Yeah. I wish I could meet those guys, shake their hands. Dude, I have no idea what even unit they were with.
Every alarm in that chopper's going off.
Oh, just going off, right.
Like,
smoke's probably filling the place.
And isn't it weird? You're in a yard. You happen to got separated by yourself with a pistol.
Right.
And those dudes are up in the sky where basically if they go down, I mean, unfortunately, that's kind of it. A lot of high explosive.
Yeah, that's probably it. The odds of us getting to them or them surviving the crash is so slim.
And so when they're flying above you, they're thinking, I would fucking never want to be that guy down there. And when you're looking up at them smoking, you go, fuck that. I would much rather be down here. You know what I mean?
You get it. Yep.
I would much rather be down here than in that fucking thing.
They call us ground pounders.
Yeah. A brother of mine, I co-host a podcast at the Veterans Museum here in town. And his dad flew a C-130. Desert Storm, they were doing close air support for the Marines. So there's two of them out, and they are critically low on fuel. However, the Marines are pinned pretty hard. I still haven't gotten him to give me the... Anyway, not good, but they need to get out of there.
Right.
They, you know, obviously those guys know exactly how much fuel they need to get back, how fast they can go or not go. They know everything. And his dad, his tail gunner, it's like, it's a very specific time that we can be out, and then there's a very specific time that we need to leave so we can get back.
Yep.
There's really no landing in just anywhere out here. We will get fucking for sure, you know, terrible things are going to happen if they capture us. And his dad says, I cannot. It fucks me up, man. It's tough to even talk about people like this because of the fucking just heart and balls, you know? And he said, I cannot leave these guys. And he went around for another pass and got shot down and died. And it's like, it's like, what a fucking hero. You know what I mean? What a motherfucker that dude is, you know, like the baddest, one of the baddest aircraft in the world. And
he, and those Marines probably lived because of him.
Absolutely. And, you know, and then like, but just the whole thing, like it takes those kind of people. And let's not even talk about combat. Let's talk about military. It takes people to dig in and fucking fight. And, you know, I had that going on with me a lot. Like in my, my regular civilian world, like I need someone, my wife, for example, is why she's my wife. 'Cause she fucking fought for me, you know, and we need somebody a lot of times to like, really give a fuck, not say you give a fuck and then not call me for another 8 months or what, like, you know what I mean? When you say you're going to fucking be some, be there, be on time, be early and show up and fight for people. And so it's people like that, man, that just, I mean, that's America, you know?
Yeah. That's 100%.
It's beautiful.
Keeps this world going.
Yep. Well, listen, man, it has been so much fun talking to you. I'm going to sign off real quick, and then I'm going to stop recording, but do me a favor, stay on the phone, okay?
All right, brother.
All right. Hey, everybody, I hope you guys enjoy this as much as I did. I got a good feeling Doc and I are going to do this a couple more times. I'm also going to talk
Agreed.
To... Yeah, I'm also going to... And please chime in on this, Doc, but I'm also going to talk to the other guys, Brown and Shoemate, and kind of get their version. We've all got, it's like that thing they say, if you and I sit and watch a movie and then tell someone a synopsis of it at the end, yours is going to be just a little bit different than mine because we all see things through a little bit different lens. So I want to get those guys too. But like Doc was saying, and I know we've talked since then, but please go back. If I don't like any of my stuff on YouTube or download or any of that, just go back a couple, 10, 15, 20 minutes or whatever, and get the info on where you can find out how to help with Legacy and how to help.
Well, give it one more time real quick.
Legacy
Military, legacymilitaryreunions.org, or just on Facebook, Legacy Military Reunions with an S.
And again, not just for reunions. Go there for all kinds of other help. So please just check that out. Like I try to say on here all the time, man, do something nice and help someone. It makes you a better person and it'll help them and all that stuff. But if you know somebody who's going through some stuff or a spouse or a child, somebody might need a service dog. I mean, there's so much stuff. Go there and just check out the whole website for me, please. And that would mean more to me than liking or subscribing or any of that other stuff.
Like and subscribe to his show too.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. But you guys, please be safe out there. Be good to yourselves and do something nice for somebody. And I'm going to have this up tomorrow. So we'll hear from you guys soon. And I'm coming back with some good stuff. So hang in there with me and we're going to get taken off soon. All right, everybody.
All right,
take
thanks
care.
Thanks for having me on, brother.
All right, Doc. We'll talk to you later.